What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your attention. We know you have a lot of choices out there. If you like this video, if you like any of our content, please share it. We know that the algorithms hate us, so we're not going to leave it up to chance there. So I'll tell you what, I put out an episode about NewsGuard, which is a fascinating topic, and it set off some alarm bells with people. They said, "Oh, I've got some good information about NewsGuard, and if you'd like to go a little bit deeper into Wikipedia, I can fill you in on that." So, here to explain all of the fuckery that's happening online is Helen Byniski. Thank you, Helen of Destroy. If you're not following her on Twitter, what the hell is your problem? She's a savage, and a writer for RT as well. So, hey, Helen, how are you? Nice to meet you.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'll tell you, you are one of the few people that I see, not just on your writing on RT, but also your sniping on Twitter, that I go, you know what, this is somebody I can get on board with here. We seem to have similar frustrations with, you know, the corporate media, and obviously you're located in New York. 2020 has been obviously the weirdest year of our lives. That goes without saying, but I'm witnessing it from afar in Denver, watching what's happening specifically in New York, but you're there and you've been very vocal about what's been happening in New York. Here we are recording this the middle of December, 2020. This everything kicked off about 9 months ago. So, what is your take? How did it start, and where and how has it progressed in those 9 months?
Well, if you're talking about New York specifically, one of the things that has really shocked and disappointed me is that New York has always had this reputation of being, you know, somewhat rebellious, somewhat in your face, people having very strong opinions about things. And I've just watched as people, I don't know if it's a form of Stockholm syndrome or what it is, but people have just completely given up on standing up to abusive authorities. And people, well, a lot of the things that I see going on online, I think, are the product of bots and, you know, CIA, Mossad, whichever intelligence agency happens to be tasked with propping up a particular narrative. I do see a lot of people in real life, the people you would least expect, like the old punk rockers who back in the 1970s were like out there, you know, fighting the power and whatnot. They're the biggest proponents of wearing masks. And if you if you dare to say something like, you know, maybe this isn't worth shutting down the entirety of society over and, you know, ditching our ways of socializing and our being human in general, they will be the first to jump down your throat. And so it's just, it's been a huge disappointment in general seeing New York just completely lose its spines, its balls, whatever body part you like to substitute for, you know, standing up for yourself. Right. New York doesn't have that anymore. And the fact that this is still going on after 9 months is just profoundly disappointing. Now, you are starting to see some, like, protests and small things starting up, speakeasies and whatnot. But it's just, it's at this point, it's too little too late because they've gotten away with so much that they realize they can just keep stomping on us and too few people are going to actually get up and do anything. I mean, and the part that really appalls me the most, now I take the subway not nearly as much as I used to because there's just nowhere to go, but when I do, I see these advertisements that just, they take over an entire car of the train and it's like these cartoon people with little masks on and there's a circle of four like cartoon people and then the guy in the middle who doesn't have a mask on. And they're all glaring at him and making frowny faces and says, don't be that guy. And the thing is that while there was supposedly cops were supposed to be giving out like $50 fines, or that was at least in the beginning, I don't know if the number has gone up, but cops are not giving out these fines. Authority figures are not enforcing any of this. This is people internalizing the man within, as Burroughs called it, and just they're enforcing the rules on themselves. There is no outside person wielding a truncheon or writing up tickets. I take the train and I'm the only person on the train not wearing a mask. And that's a really scary feeling because it just means that they don't have to punch you in the face and knock you down and take you to jail or whatever, because you're just obeying thoughtlessly. And I don't know where this comes from. I mean, I've watched that there seems to be like the dividing line, at least as far as I've noticed in my friends and acquaintances, as being, do you watch television news or do you not watch television news? If you watch television news, then you are completely with the program. I mean, I use the hashtag OMFG virus to distinguish it from the actual virus itself, which it is a thing. It exists. As I said, it's not worth shutting down a society over. But OMFG virus also takes into account the narrative and the fear porn and the this weird cult that's grown up around it, that, you know, the mask is like the new cross or whatever. I've written extensively about this. But and so the TV watching seems to be the divide. If you don't watch television, it doesn't really matter what your politics are, because I've seen people who are supposedly right-wing go with this, people who are supposedly left-wing go with this. And a lot of people who used to, at least, have some sort of understanding about authoritarianism and the U.S. empire being a force for generally evil in the world, or more controlled by Israel, but U.S.-rael, whatever you would call it, being a force for evil in the world. And these are the ones who are now saying, oh, well, you know, we can't criticize Fauci and Gates because they're just trying to help us. Yeah, just like the guy who comes along in the white van and offers a lollipop to your six-year-old daughter. He just wants her to have a nice sweetie, right? He's not gonna. It's completely ridiculous that people are falling for this. And I mean, after 9 months, what? I don't know. There's got to be a way around this propaganda, and I'm working on trying to find it. And it's an uphill battle, but.
It's been disappointing because, like you said, New York has this attitude, man. It's got punk rock attitude, CBGB, all this, you know, this fuck you sort of thing. And hey, we're New York. And if it's not happening here, it's not happening. And that, you know, is that it's cool. It can rub some people the wrong way, but it's an energy and it's a mentality. And it seems like it's been sucked right out of people. That like you said, that it's not even divided along political lines. It's divided along media lines. Are you somebody that watch it? I mean, it's like you can tell right away. You watch CNN, you watch MSNBC, and you watch Fox. Clearly, it just based on the level of insanity. Oh, you're wearing three masks. You're watching CNN. You're wearing a mask driving alone in your car. You must like Rachel Maddow. So it's almost. And the thing that gets me the most, and it's not limited, of course, to New York City. It's happening everywhere. If you turn on your TV and you see commercials, it's the normalization of the mask, as if, oh yeah, how of course we're wearing masks. We're good people. Now, I get it. If you think you're helping and you view non-mask wearers as not getting along with the program, making everything take twice as long, because I can understand where their frustration would come. Of course, it's not anchored in science or reality or anything like that. It's anchored in, you know, internalizing their fear and then projecting that out onto you as like, I'm trying to save you. It's like, I'm good. Thank you. But this normalization through the media, through commercials, is so disgusting. And yet when you rightly point it out to someone and question why that's happening, we're the conspiracy theorists. We're the problem. We're the maniacs. We're the ones that are doing it all wrong. Is this has got to be the greatest psychological operation in the history of our species. Right?
Yeah, that's basically what I'm seeing. I mean, there's now, if you walk into a supermarket or you walk into any public place and they have a radio station playing, no matter what the radio station is, there will be at least one commercial every 10 minutes that says, if you need to go get tested for COVID-19, doesn't matter if you don't have any symptoms, you should go get tested right now. And you can actually see these clinics, there are people lined up around the block in these clinics. And these aren't people who are sick or coughing or in any way looking distressed. These are just people who are following orders. And even like, I don't have a television, so I don't see this very often, but if I walk by a television that happens to be on and there's a commercial and nobody in the commercial is wearing masks, there will be a line written under it saying, this was filmed safely, please wear a mask. And I mean, it's really over the top. Just this whole, as you said, there's nothing scientific about it. And yet they place this idea of capitalist science on a pedestal and begin worshiping it just rapidly. And I do think that this has to do with, in general, like, I'm not a particularly religious person, but I have noticed that people who are religious are less likely to sign on to the cult of Corona because they already have a religion in their lives. And so, I mean, I live in South Brooklyn. There's a large Orthodox Jewish population, and these people are not going along with the OMFG virus. And it's the same thing with very devout Christians. They're not going along. And so, I don't know. I feel like us New York liberals are maybe at a disadvantage because we don't have this religious basis. But I mean, if I can get away with not prostrating myself at the feet of this bogus bastardization of science, why can't everybody else? And I don't think that should be an excuse, but I do think that has something to do with it.
Yeah. Is de Blasio losing his grip on the city? Because I think a case
could be, never had a grip on the city.
Never had it, but his influence, there's still some people that looked at him and say, well, he told us. I mean, he does have the power to shut things down, apparently. So stuff like that. Are we getting to a turning point with him where the people are about to get the torches and pitchforks out and go march on this guy? Because he seems like, of all of them, he seems like a guy that is so disconnected, and Cuomo too, I'll put him in the same category, so disconnected from reality and so high on their own power that they don't even maybe understand that the population is right, you know, is feeling the sense that they're almost forced to rise up against him in order to take back not a great life, but just normal life, just the bare minimums of life as it used to be, to try and put this back. And you have to beg a guy like Bill de Blasio, a guy that has shown over the years an empathy deficient psychopath who, and Cuomo too, with his double nipple rings and his insanity. These two guys, to me, straight out of central casting for villains. And yet a segment of the population of New York City is going along with this. And it seems crazy to me. Are you getting the sense that they're losing any sort of influence that they might've had compared to when this whole thing kicked off?
I wish I could say that they were, but like I broke into there for a second, de Blasio never really had, he's so spaced out. He doesn't know what day or time it is. And nobody's ever, I mean, there was a brief period during the summer when there was the fireworks that were going off constantly, right? And it were really more like mortars or bombs. Or, I mean, there was, I've lived in New York for going on 15 years now, and I've never been afraid to go outside, but there was a point at which it really sounded like there were bombs going off outside, and I just didn't want any part of it. And there were people who were very upset about that, about being kept up until 5 o'clock in the morning. These fireworks would start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and when it was not dark, and it would keep going until 5 o'clock in the morning. People got sick of that. They started protesting outside de Blasio's house, the Gracie mansion, and said, basically saying, if we can't sleep, you can't either. Now, he ended up sending out some cops to crack down on these fireworks, even though it was clearly a government operation from the beginning. And but the problem is that Cuomo actually does have some control. There are people, I wish that people would rise up and do something, but there are so many people who are just, I think a lot of it has to do with people just trying to make ends meet and trying to, you know, get their lives going. And but there is also, I mean, it seems to me that it would be impossible not to understand that this creepy nipple ring wearing monstrosity. Now, my theory is that he was, those are actually pierced by AIPAC, and AIPAC likes to lead him around on a leash. And I mean, because he allows that, that's how he's allowed to crack down on the Orthodox Jewish population, because the other Jewish population is basically leading him around by his nipples, by these little piercings. But I know it's a disgusting mental image, right? But all the more reason to get him out of there. I mean, even the California is standing up. California is doing recall operation against Newsom. And so why is there nothing like this for Cuomo? Obviously, yes, second generation New York politician, born and bred to be the most corrupt scumbag on the face of the earth. Yeah, he's got that going for him. But I just don't understand why more people don't really awaken to this. Maybe it's because, I mean, some restaurants are able to get by with this outdoor thing and buy heaters and stuff, but I mean, it's supposed to snow this week. Are you really think people are going to be coming out here and eating out in the snow? I don't think that's going to happen. And it's just so obviously an asset stripping operation. Cuomo, his reopening council, has got all these private equity scumbags on it. So it's like, okay, we're going to just depress the real estate prices, drive everybody out of business, acquire everything, and then, yeah, pod apartments for everybody. So it's like, to me, it's very, very obvious what's going on here. And it upsets me when I hear people trying to say, oh, you know, Cuomo's just doing his best. Or it's like, oh, well, you know, at least Cuomo's standing up to Trump. And it's like, is Trump really the be all end all of the most evil thing you can imagine? Is this blundering orange buffoon? Like, I mean, I have to wonder, like, people's imaginations, what did they think was evil before Trump? Because people used to like Trump when he was on The Apprentice and he was just a harmless television goon person. But now, and what are they going to do when he's gone? Like, what's going to be their moral lodestar or whatever? It's, I don't know. But these people have very little imagination, and they're basically being spoon-fed the narrative, and they're going along with it. Because in a time of great uncertainty, like we're dealing with right now, people, for some reason, like being told what to do. It makes them feel like somebody's in control, and so it's all going to be okay if you just line up and get your Gates-sponsored chemical cocktail, then everything is going to be fine. Even though they're even coming at it admitting already that, like, actually, you know, it's not going to change anything, and things still aren't going to be normal for another 2 years, but you have to take it anyway because, you know, science.
Right. Science. Yeah, I'm wondering, you touched on something here, and I know that you've written about this in your work before, the oversized influence of Israel in general and AIPAC in particular. You kind of jokingly said that Cuomo's being led around by his nipple rings. He wouldn't be the first. He wouldn't be the only one. There is, for all of this talk, and we've had 4 years of Russia interfered in our election, and now we're starting to get the, well, China's interfering in our election too. It's like, are we just going to ignore the elephant in the room, that the foreign country that's actually controlling our elections, and that is Israel? Those who shall not be named, right? And so I find this extremely frustrating, because any conversation that people have, any debate that people have about the undue influence of Russia interfering in our election, it's like, let's put that on the back burner until we discuss the priority. Russia, do they influence our election? Do they want to have a say in it? Sure, I'm sure they want to have a say in it. I don't know which serial killer they would prefer, but it doesn't matter. Israel's role in this is staggering, and it has been hidden. We know why and we know how, but what is your take on the role of AIPAC in American politics right now in 2020?
Well, I mean, the Congresswoman, former Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, was the one who exposed that basically at the time, Congress people had to basically sign a loyalty oath to this country that is not the country they were elected to serve, which is just completely insane. The fact that some people still don't know that after all these years is rather appalling, because I would say that, I mean, you're being asked to sign a loyalty oath to a country that you have nothing to do with and that just, you know, happens to call the shots in American politics. But then, of course, after she exposed it, it became, oh, you have to write a paragraph about how much Israel means to you. And so, yeah, it's just the elephant in the room. I mean, AIPAC is just one example. There are many of these organizations. The ADL is, of course, a big one. And there, I mean, if you were going to talk about Wikipedia, the ADL has really gotten its hooks into Wikipedia and in general, just trying to stop hate on the internet. Now, the word hate has been expanded so dramatically to include basically everything that reflects unfavorably upon this like government of war criminals and terrorists. And so it's like, obviously no one wants to be pro hate. And so you just, this is what they've been doing for so many things. It's first it was, okay, we're going to, nobody likes white supremacists, right? So yeah, white supremacists bad, duh. And then they just keep expanding the definition of white supremacists. So now it's everything that, is not just complete. I don't know. I mean, I think people understand what I'm talking about regarding the expansion of the definition, because it's become a political thing. If you're not completely on board with like the neoliberal centrist Biden liberals, which liberal doesn't really apply here, but they've changed the meaning of the word. And now they're doing the same thing with QAnon. Is that offguardian.org, which is a great website. You can find all kinds of really intelligent discussion going on there. But they were blocked by Facebook for being QAnon. And it's like, wait a second, they have nothing to do with QAnon. So it's, yeah, another thing, demonize, expand, shove everybody you don't like into that category, and then, whoops, mission accomplished. So yeah, the ADL is big on that front. And yeah, there are just all of these little organizations that weasel their way into basically controlling how we are allowed to talk about our own reality. And it's just completely bizarre that people put up with this. But again, I think that I did a presentation earlier this year, actually right before the OMFG virus thing started, about alienation and how alienation is used to basically control the mind of the individual. You get them alienated first from their society, their family, their loved ones, and finally themselves. And once you've got them alienated from themselves and distrusting their own common sense and unable to make any decisions without consulting with the authority figure of the state or whoever it happens to be, then you've really got them by the balls and there's nothing that they can do. And that's what we're seeing with this OMFG virus thing. These constantly shifting truths, quote unquote. You can't have anything on YouTube that goes against the WHO. But the WHO's explanation of what's going on has changed multiple times in the last several months. And so you can't, like, there's no firm ground to stand on. And you're constantly having to second guess yourself. And am I wrong? Or is everybody else crazy? Or am I crazy? And I mean, the gaslighting is an overused term, but it really does apply here, because we're basically being told, no, the sky is not blue. No, this is, there is no such thing as immunity or your own immune system. You cannot, and it's just, obviously the goal is to throw you off balance and make you distrust literally everything. And then you can only get your information from these approved sources, these NewsGuard approved sources or Wikipedia approved sources. I mean, once I saw that the WHO had signed on with Wikipedia to be the guardians of the official OMFG virus narrative, it's just like, okay, well, you could just, pack it in, guys. Reality is not reality anymore. They've literally redefined the concept of truth. Wikipedia doesn't have truth. They have verifiability, which means that one or more quote-unquote reliable sources have said something is true. And so, I mean, you can't even make a satire of that, because it's literally like, okay, so this is the repository of knowledge. This is the Library of Alexandria. No, this is the opposite of the Library of Alexandria. This is the ashes of the Library of Alexandria. Right. And so there's no such thing as truth anymore. Truth is what's true for you. I mean, again, this, you can't even make fun of it, because the satire is what they're literally telling us.
Yeah, it's straight out of 1984. And if you point that out, then they brand that as untruthful. And you're like, what are you talking? I mean, the shaping of the narrative, or the control of the platforms that allow narrative building is fascinating. Like I said, that episode on NewsGuard and how they do their rating systems and how wonky that is. And then of course they staff their their board of directors with the least credible people in the world, like the spies and propagandists and public relations firm people that represented, like, you know, Union Carbide after the Bhopal Express. I mean, it's just the worst shitheads in the world. And yet we want to go and express ourselves and talk about the things that we believe to be true online, and it's instantly slapped down. It's the Southern Poverty Law Center is involved, the ADL, which is fascinating to me. The Anti-Defamation League spends a good portion of their time going around defaming other people. It's just total inversion and hilarious, if it wasn't so frustrating. But Wikipedia. Now, I always knew that they were, you know, I always knew that they had the potential to be corrupted, and I never go to them for anything controversial. If I'm looking up somebody that is, you know, somebody that's a public figure and I want to know how old they are or some obscure sort of fact like that, I can go on there and I feel fairly comfortable that I'll get the right information. But if I want to know about their political history, past, or the things that they voted on, I know better than to go there. But the average person who hasn't had to deal with these sorts of things probably thinks that Wikipedia is a, for the most part, safe and reliable platform to gather information or to get information on someone. Explain to us why it's not.
Okay, I mean, there's a long way of doing this and a short way of doing this, but basically,
take your time, because I want people to be certain from this point on about their relationship with Wikipedia and what it really is, who's behind it, who's running it, so that they never fall in that trap ever again. So take as much time as you need, please.
So people trust Wikipedia erroneously because they think, oh, this is edited just by people like me. And Wikipedia, of course, milks this to the core. One of the reasons why they get away with so much that they do is that they're not one of these multi-billion dollar tech companies. They're run by a nonprofit organization called the Wikimedia Foundation. However, that's not like they're poor and sticking their hand out. While they do always carry these fundraising banners saying, oh, just give $2.50 and you'll save us from getting shut down. They make hundreds of millions of dollars a year in contributions from large corporations, from, of course, other nonprofits. I mean, the usual suspects, the Omidyars, the Soroses, the Gates, these big, huge monstrosities that need to control the narrative, because if they don't control the narrative, then the truth gets out and they'd have mobs of people with pitchforks at their door. But, of course, it's not people like you and me who are writing Wikipedia. It's intelligence agencies. The U.S., U.K., and Israel are, of course, the big three. I mean, the UK, that the Integrity Initiative scandal from a couple of years ago, Wikipedia was one of the big things that they were focusing on. This was basically the Institute for Statecraft. And I mean, maybe you can include a link about this, because I don't feel the need to go into that in too much detail. But it just really did expose, like, kind of how this is a character assassination operation that's funded by the state against its own citizens. And the US, of course, does the same thing. I mean, they've known that CIA and FBI were editing Wikipedia since 2008. And yet somehow people are like, oh, well, yeah, they got discovered, so they don't do it anymore. It's kind of like Operation Mockingbird. It's like, well, yeah, we know that the CIA has got all these people in every single mainstream media organization, but they got found out, so they must not be doing it anymore. And I don't understand how you can have such a completely batshit insane relationship with your own government. But at any rate, so there are entire programs, like the Israeli military has got literally rows and columns of people sitting there editing Wikipedia, and they're all mostly editing in English too. There is a Hebrew Wikipedia. There are Wikipedias in every language, basically, but they're mostly focusing on the English language one because that's the big deal. And so the entire political viewpoint of English language Wikipedia is like pro-NATO, pro-Zionist. If you try to get a word in edgewise, that's something else. Well, you'll get reverted in about 5 minutes. I mean, I've tried to edit Wikipedia in the past, and it never seems to work out very well. I generally get banned within, you know, a couple weeks of trying to do just, you know, minor corrections. You see, like, the most recent thing I did was try to fix that there was that organization that investigated the Bolivian elections that were supposedly terribly wrong, and oh yes, we have to get rid of Morales because he cheated on the elections. And there was an organization that found out that was completely bogus, and they were described in Wikipedia as a far left radical organization. It was like Columbia University. It's like, That's not far left radical guys. So I tried to fix that and no, that didn't work. But that's what happens when you, and it's funny that you mention controversial topics and not looking for Wikipedia and controversial topics. Every topic is controversial to someone. So literally, yeah, unless you're looking up someone's age or location of birth. And even then, sometimes they like to change things like, so-and-so was born into a Jewish family. Oh, really? Is that, why is it always phrased like that, by the way? I mean, it's very strange because they don't say that about other religions. So it's okay. I guess we have another double standard here, but it just, like, the fact that this has been going on for so long, the fact that they're getting away with so much of this, I mean, there was a big expose that some editors did in 2016, basically showing about how they had been, Wikipedia had been consulting with this extremely obscure sort of PR firm called Manassian Group. And this is affiliated with the Clinton family and Clinton Global Initiative and all that. And so why would Wikipedia find this completely obscure? Like, if you try to look up Craig Manassian, who's the head guy, you can't find much about this person. You can't, their website is basically, it's extremely difficult to find any information about them. And yet this was the company that Wikipedia had come in and train their employees in public relations and how to deal with the media. And okay, well, this year we're going to focus on fake news and how fake news is a scourge and we all have to fight against fake news. And so you can just see what's going on now with the WHO partnering with Wikipedia. And of course, Jimmy Wales, the co-founder, he likes to call himself the founder, but he actually had a little bit of help founding Wikipedia. And he's in heaven right now because he's always wanted Wikipedia to be the reputable source that it never has been, because it's just, I mean, he's the biggest social climber. He married Tony Blair's former diary secretary so he could get himself weaseled into British high society. And it's just, talking to people who knew him personally back in the day, you hear that he's never bathed. He always had this kind of greasy sheen to him. And it's just like, you know, you see everything that's disgusting about Wikipedia and how it just has been used to completely pervert the concept of truth and just encyclopedias in general. I mean, the real encyclopedias, like the Britannicas, all that, are basically they're on the balls of their ass. They don't really have any authority anymore because they just can't compete with Wikipedia. And while there are plenty of volunteer editors who think they're doing the right thing, and some of them actually are, you know, trying to keep Wikipedia at least having a shouting distance from the truth, they're just no match for these organized groups that have all of the backing of intelligence agencies and have all the backing of these NGOs and these nonprofit organizations. And it's like Wikipedia is actually violating U.S. tax law by just using itself as a political platform, because it's a 501, the Wikimedia Foundation is a 501c3, which means it's not allowed to politicize, not allowed to pick favorites in elections and stuff like that. But if you look at, I mean, just as an example, pull up one of the 9 trillion articles about Donald Trump and how evil he is, and then pull up the Joe Biden article, and I guarantee you it's going to be pretty clear which side Wikipedia is on. Like, not that there's even enough of a difference between these two to really matter in the grand scheme of things, but some people really believe in the U.S. democratic system, and so they pile on all this stuff about Trump. Now, I haven't actually been watching the Trump entry in a year or so, because after COVID happened, I'm working on a book about Wikipedia, so that kind of got put on ice for a bit because there was this other sudden world-ending disaster that we all had to deal with. But so I haven't been keeping up on the Trump entries, but what they've been doing steadily over the last couple of years is just shutting the door on all of these formerly reliable sources. They started with the Daily Mail, which has, oddly enough, been one of the few mainstream organizations that's willing to at least tell some of the truth about the OMFG virus. They had a big feature a couple weeks ago about how basically all of these elderly people in these care homes were allowed to die, not given food and water, and Amnesty International got involved in all this big stuff, but you didn't see that in any of the other mainstream publications. So it's interesting that Wikipedia picked the Daily Mail as a test case to basically attempt to discredit, and how NewsGuard also picked them as the test case to attempt to discredit. They managed to get their NewsGuard rating switched around because they happen to be one of the most popular media organizations in the English language. So NewsGuard realized that picking a fight with these guys was maybe not the smartest thing to do. But Wikipedia, on the other hand, they don't have to answer to shareholders. They don't have to answer to anybody. They're a nonprofit organization that just happens to get hundreds of millions of dollars from all the pharmaceutical corporations, all the big NGOs. And the pharmaceutical thing is unbelievable. I just looked up before we started this talk. I wanted to see what Wikipedia was saying about treatment for the OMFG virus. And it's a huge, long article, and there's multiple huge, long articles. Tried Control-F, ivermectin, this treatment that doctors are talking about being a very useful thing in, treating this hypothetical virus, because if we're on YouTube, we can't talk about things like that. But the word is not mentioned once in any of these articles. That's a little weird. And so it's funny that the WHO claims to be like the first health entity that's really got a partnership with Wikipedia, because that's not true. Wikipedia has been sponsoring workshops for people in National Institutes of Health, for different pharmaceutical companies. I believe Merck and Glaxo were the two. This was back in like 2010, so I might be naming the wrong company, but I know Merck was one of them. And so they've actually they've been trying to weasel their way into the medical industry for some time now. And the part that really scares me is that now that we have all this distance learning and stuff, and Bill Gates getting his maw around the New York educational system. And so there's going to be all this distance learning, and we need to use online resources. And we don't have the money for textbooks, so let's just use Wikipedia. They were doing this back in January. Wikipedia was trying to get its hooks into the educational system, talking about, this school district in Minnesota can't afford textbooks, but golly gee, they've got Wikipedia, and so it's all going to be okay. And now this is what they're doing, because this is their most recent additions to the board of Wikimedia Foundation is this Israeli woman, Sherry Evanstein Sigalov, I believe is her name, and she made her master's thesis on Wikipedia as an educational tool. And so they're really going all out. And once they have the education system under their thumb, there's no coming back from that, because you're going to be teaching an entire generation of children already completely damaged and screwed up by all of this mask stuff and social distancing. And we're raising a generation of serial killers here. But once they've completely just lost track of the idea that there can be such a thing as truth, and we're going to go with the verifiability and reliable sources. By the way, it's no coincidence that Brian Stelter, who looks like this, his weird little face there. Brian Stelter, the creepy little man on CNN, his show is called Reliable Sources. That's not a coincidence. And so it's, I don't know, there's so many layers of this, and I've written a lot about it. You can go to my website, HollandDestroy.com. There's one of the menu items is exposing Wikipedia, and you can see a lot of the stuff there. But this is a huge operation. It might seem like, just because these little begging for money at the top of the thing. Well, The Guardian begs for money, too. You think The Guardian is a bunch of dudes in their garage? No, The Guardian is funded by Bill Gates, like every other mainstream media organization. But, yeah, it's Wikipedia is a very powerful, very scary organization, and it's controlling you more than you think. Lazy journalists will go in there to get whatever factoid they need. It doesn't matter if the factoid is untrue, but by them printing it, it becomes true. And so Wikipedia can point to that and say, hey, well, reliable source said it. So the phenomenon is called cytogenesis, and it's supposedly helps the Canadian mounted police arrest Meng Wanzhou of Huawei. But I don't believe that's necessarily true. I think that the guy said that it was, he looked in the Wikipedia article, and that inspired him to interrogate her about Iran. No, he was asked to do that by the FBI. But I just thought that was funny, because it is, if true, it would be an example of cytogenesis in action. But no, not really.
I wonder if Jimmy Wales decided that he was going to create a company in his own image, slimy and stinky and disgusting and untrustworthy. Maybe that's how he came up for
it. Well, he did have this thing called BOMIS, BOMIS, and I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but at any rate, it was like this sort of like porny search engine, and it was like a web ring of like with porn links, and then all the Bomas Babes, and it would be like wet t-shirt contests and stuff. And that was the predecessor to Wikipedia. So he really is just this low life scumbag, and everybody who's ever worked with him basically hates his guts. So it's like, you're never going to have any shortage of people coming out to say, that Jimmy Wales, he's really a scumbag. How did he get so much power? Oh, because, he's just cozied up to the right people. I mean, his big break was in 2005, meeting Bono of U2. Bono got him to Davos. And once he hooked up with the Davos crowd, well, the rest is history, because, you've got this giant, supposedly crowdsourced encyclopedia that purports to know the truth about everything. Yeah, the ruling class are going to be interested in that. So that was really when it hit it big. I mean, some people think that it was an intelligence operation from day one, and that's entirely possible. But certainly 2005 is when it took off.
It's interesting because though we weren't alive for the Black Plague, I just feel like maybe they didn't have to have a public relations department for it, It was self-evident by the fact that people in your family were falling over dead and that it was a thing. It is not without being noticed that like you said, you're in a store that has the radio on every 10 minutes, you're hearing, wear your mask and social distance or anything. Quite an ad campaign. It seems like the public relations, in conjunction with the mainstream media, their partners at places like Wikipedia, are doing everything they can to convince you that there's actually a pandemic going on, when that should be redundant and unnecessary. If you were in an actual pandemic, that the situation would be self-evident, and yet here we are trying to sell it. And we, you and I, and people in our sort of space, we're real good at spotting media lies. We've covered them for a long time. We recognize them when we see it. This seems to me like a product launch that wasn't getting off the ground very well. And then they introduced the mask component to it as a visual representation of a virus that you can't see, or an epidemic that's not actually happening. What's the psychology behind this? Where's this coming from? Is this coming from Tavistock? Is this coming from the government? Is it coming from Big Pharma? Is this a combination of everything? Is this coming from Bill Gates? Is this the culmination of a lifetime of buying up and influencing media assets with all of his money? Or in potentially, and to be clear, speculation on my part, if you're friends with Jeffrey Epstein and you've got $120 billion, why wouldn't you have a copy of everything he had? It seems to me like they are putting in overtime to sell this thing, a thing that in a real sense should not need to be sold.
Yeah, I mean, and especially back in February, supposedly when the WHO, at least hypothetically, was running around trying to figure out what causes this and what's all this. But instead, you've got the WHO talking about, we're in the middle of an infodemic. And if we're not careful, well, conspiracy theories are killing people. And it's like, wait a second, I thought we had a killer virus on the loose. What's this infodemic thing? But as far as where this is all coming from, it's coming from every direction. We have the fourth industrial revolution is underway, supposedly. We've got Klaus Schwab, who really, again, these people are straight out of central casting. It's like, if you want a Bond villain with his ridiculous outfits and his like Jabba the Hutt head and stuff, and it's like, ugh, I mean, really gross. But Davos, this whole conglomeration of extremely wealthy people, and a lot of people like Bill Gates, very easy to hate, again, straight out of central casting, gibbering and squealing when he's talking about people dying and stuff. But this is the front man for the City of London, Rothschild, the whole, like, the money power, basically. And so you've got these really horrific people like Gates and Fauci, who is just like this walking Napoleon complex of a man, like, oh, so slimy. And so they have to sell these people, and they hope that, okay, well, everybody's going to just direct their hate on these people, but they're still going to think that there's a terrible virus on the loose, because otherwise, why would everybody be talking about a terrible virus? Are you saying everybody's lying? You must be crazy. And again, get you to doubt yourself, doubt your common sense, even though I would say most people, I mean, I know some people who've had it, but those people actually agree that, this is not something you need to shut down society over. Yeah, it sucks to get sick. It sucks to have the flu too, but it's like, No, I mean, the fact that they're trying to shame you if you think that, oh, well, you know, maybe putting millions of people out of work and risking eviction for millions more is not the best way to deal with a virus that actually has a 99.7% survival rate. And so that's the evil thing to say. And you must not be a team player. And this whole idea that we're in this together, and no, actually, we're not. I mean, there's us non-ruling class people. Yes, we're in this together, and we need to realize that very quickly, because they're doing so many little divide and conquer things. I mean, the whole Black Lives Matter scam. I mean, obviously, yes, there is racism in the justice system, but three trained, lifetime nonprofit, really like slimy people who are trying to exploit the suffering of poor Black people is. I mean, that's a really a very cynical and nasty whole program. And most people can see through it. But these, you know, the well-meaning white liberals would be the ones who they want to put everyone up against the wall who doesn't agree with them. So it's very, if you actually can see what's going on, it sucks, because you want to be screaming about this. And yet, you know that if you start screaming about this, then you're going to get attacked, and you're going to have big problems. And well, yeah, you know, we're never going to work in this town again, where this town means the entire world. So, I mean, that's the big problem with the fourth industrial revolution, is that once you've got everybody under this one global tyranny, then there's really nowhere else to go. And that's why people wonder why I'm still in New York. And it's like, well, where exactly are you going to run to?
Right.
I mean, run, maybe you'll buy yourself a year or two if you move out to Montana or something, but sorry, I don't, there's no point in running when it's all going to catch up to you. We have to fight this now, where we are now, and unite with people, because I'm sorry, I don't care how much you have not in common with the average Trump supporter or the average like liberal. You guys have a lot more in common than you think. You're not Klaus Schwab, and you're not invited to the big party at Davos. So we need to unite, and we need to start holding these people accountable, because otherwise, like I said, there's nowhere to go.
Yeah. And the fourth industrial revolution has been an interesting thing. I've been telling people that one of the ladies that's in charge of the technology component of that is Isabel Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell. So it's like,
oh boy,
if you had your doubts about whether or not you should get on board with this World Economic Forum and who they, and the Klaus Schwab and his costume didn't give it away, then let's dig into the member list and get to the bottom of it and say, well, you see, Ghislaine Maxwell's sister's running this. Okay, good. That's all I need to know. I'm out of here. But in a very real sense, like you said, we can say we're out of here, but are we going to actually be allowed to be out of it? Because the way they're building up this fortress around us, it's putting us in a situation where, sure, the vaccine's not mandatory, but it's mandatory in your life if you want to travel or have your kids in school or all these things. They're going to make it so difficult for us. And yet the sales pitch, the Great Reset sales pitch, boy, I got to hand it to them. It's very flashy, and it looks good, and it touches on some very real points, pointing out some of the inefficiencies that we currently have in the system. And I don't think anyone would deny that. Like, you know, there's some real problems. Sure, there's real problems, but what they're offering as the solution to those problems is clearly a dystopian nightmare. But because it's dressed up, because they've used every marketing tactic in their powers, including guilt and fear and fear of going without and fear of the unknown and uncertainty, and of course this virus that won't kill you, but they make it. It's putting people in a position where you wouldn't have ever accepted this. You wouldn't have even considered it this time last year. But as you go through a full year, a calendar year of destruction, and now they're offering you the solution is blue skies and sunshine over here, or you can stay in your Antifa store shutdown city and deal with that. Now you're starting to see people say, oh, what is that Great Reset over there? Tell me more about it. So it's almost as if they had to create the conditions in order for you to even come to consider it. And the conditions being destroy everything in your way, you know, in in your real world and now offer it as the solution, dressed up as, you know, some version of technocratic communism, serfdom, however you want to classify it. This sales pitch is nothing but that, a sales pitch, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, they definitely had to traumatize the shit out of us first and just keep stomping on us and stomping on us and stomping on us until finally a brief reprieve from the stomping is seen as like, oh, wow, look at this techno utopia. And oh, so what if we just have to get one little shot or two little shots or three, or yeah, you're going to need to get new ones every year. And well, a lot of people are willing to put up with that because they don't understand that, for one thing, this isn't an ordinary vaccine. I mean, the people who are talking about the Moderna guy who's, the fact checkers all say, well, it can't actually alter your DNA. Okay, so why is Talzax of Moderna talking about for years how great it's going to be to alter people's DNA with this shot? Okay, I don't know. I think I believe that guy, not the fact checkers. Who, right. I mean, and that's another big problem that like Wikipedia has actually contributed to a lot, is that they're used as fact checking for, now Twitter wants to use Wikipedia to verify, Google's been using it to verify. YouTube is obviously a subsidiary of Google, but I mean, Google actually has its raters, site raters. These are the people who determine where your site appears on a Google search. You're supposed to go EAT is what it's something, and trustworthiness. I can never remember what the E expertise. A and trustworthiness, and that you're supposed to find those by looking at Wikipedia, and that's how they just decide where your site ends up on the whole long list. So. It's expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness, and and Facebook too. Everybody fact checks using Wikipedia, so this is completely absurd. And yeah, getting back to as far as the tiny little window to climb out of the cell that they've had you in for the last 9 months, and so those who don't go along are the non-team players. And as you said, they're not going to make the vaccine mandatory at first. It's just going to be, oh, do you want to go see a live music again? Do you want to travel? The World Economic Forum has been working on this health passport for years now. This is not something that came along with COVID. They've had white papers going back years. It's called the Known Traveler Digital Identity. And I wrote about this in the chapter I did for the book When China Sneezes, Cynthia McKinney's latest book, which came out in August. And Amazon has only just now started shipping your copies. So yeah, buy straight from the publisher, Clarity Press. We can include a link. But I wrote about this. This was before I knew what the Great Reset was, but I describe a lot of the aspects of it. This I wrote the chapter back in March, so that wasn't really that well of a known thing. But the KTDI, basically what they want is, okay, it'll have your health information, it'll have your financial information, it'll have your relational information, your social networks and stuff. And it will have behavioral data based on, okay, so this is what you did in this last country that you were in, and by looking at this, and now the guy at the hotel in the next country you're going to can say, do I really want this person to be staying at my hotel? Because, you know, he ran a big tab at that bar, or I think he bought some drugs there, or like, so it's going to be a big thing where everything you do is on this blockchain. And they tried to get us all comfortable with the idea of the blockchain by, oh, Bitcoin is going to be the savior of privacy and everything. And yeah, cryptocurrencies, okay, yeah, it has crypto in it, sounds private, right? Then why aren't all these central banks coming out with digital currencies? Yeah, they got us accustomed to that nice idea with private, untraceable Bitcoin, whatever. And now they're going to flip it on its head, and it's going to be central bank digital currencies everywhere. The Fed is already working on this. Again, has been working on this since before COVID was a thing. And China has already got one. The EU is working on one. This stuff, obviously, this has been in the works for a lot longer than since Event 201 popped up. And yeah. If anything, Event 201 almost seemed like it was, okay, so the virus got out a little prematurely, so let's make sure everybody's ready. Dress rehearsal, come on, let's go. Right. And we have the documents going back to 2010, the Rockefeller Foundation and the Global Business Network, the Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development, which, I'm sorry, if you read that and you don't get that this is exactly what we're dealing with right now, I don't think there's really much that I can say to help you, because I think a lot of people, they don't want to believe this sort of thing is true because it requires them to completely upend their understanding of the world. And, oh, yes, Big Daddy government will help and save you. And, you know, people are integrally good. And just people who have lots of money are good. That's how they got all the money, right? I mean, I'm sorry, if you're Bill Gates and Oprah and Warren Buffett and all these other people who have to call your organization the Good Club, yeah, you're the guy in the white van with the lollipop, and anybody who gets in that van with you is really going to be sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this total inversion when you deal with these people that come out and create organizations and name them something, and then you find out that they do the exact opposite of what it is. It's turned into a bit of a fun game for us to sort of pick out, you know, like when Google says, hey, you know, our motto is going to be don't be evil. And then it goes away after a certain time. It's like, so did your mission statement change? Or, I mean, are we going to give Google points for at least being honest that they got rid of the don't be evil? But these massive corporations now, what we've watched over the last 9 months has been an utter gutting of the small and medium-sized business at the expense, you know, Main Street is done. It's all Amazons and Walmarts. We see the blatant hypocrisy of keeping big box stores open while shutting down small and medium-sized businesses and the inconsistency with restaurants and things like that we talked about earlier. It's just been, it's been a gigantic mindfuck. And it seems to me like part of this psychological operation has been to inject intentionally contradictory information into the narrative. Start with one, which is, Fauci comes out and says, you don't need to wear the mask. It doesn't do anything. It's more psychological, you know, and you're like, oh, okay. All right. Well, we don't need to wear the mask. And then 3 months later, it's, how dare you not wear the mask? You know, if you don't wear the mask, we're going to arrest you in a park with your daughter playing. And that we're going to make a big production out of this. And it seems that after a while of that, and I, you know, it's been a couple of months here, but I'm not pretending that this won't go on even longer. You get to the point with most people in their brain where they get pulled one way, they get pulled the other way. They just finally throw their hands up and say, I make it stop. Just whatever. I don't care. Tell me what you want me to do to make it stop. And it seems like whether this is from lockstep that the Rockefellers put forth or whether this is Event 201, they factored this human component, this psychological human element into their scenarios, because they seem to have broken a segment of the population's mind with this OMFG virus that you talk about. How do we break out of this? I mean, is this an every man for himself sort of situation, or are we going to invest the time and energy to wake up the sleeping morons out there that are the first in line for the vaccine? Or do we just have to prioritize our time and effort and say, those people are done. I'm going to focus on people that are willing to accept this information.
I think, I mean, as much as I would like to be able to wake up the people who are completely adverse to having anything to do with reality, and the learned helplessness has set in and they can't be bothered to hear reality anymore. As much as I would like to save all those people, I mean, you put the information out there, you try to get it under their critical capability that they've borrowed from the government, because they don't actually have a critical capability or they wouldn't be there in the first place, but they've borrowed one and you have to get it around them. It's just the same people who, they refuse to read anything that's written by RT because, oh, it's Russian propaganda. Oh, have you ever read anything on RT? No. Okay, so how do you know it's Russian propaganda? I don't need to touch fire to know it's hot. Somebody actually said that to me once. And I was just like, okay, there's no helping you. But there are plenty of people who are sort of midway off the cliff, like they're dangling from the cliff, and there is a possibility that you can save them. These are the people we need to focus on. I mean, there are plenty of people out there like you and I and your audience and my audience who get it. Those people are great. We need to work together, get the people who are dangling off the cliff. Maybe they will be able to reach the people who are further down. But right now, if you're just screaming into the void and trying to get these people who really don't want to hear anything you're saying, then yeah, you're wasting your effort. And I unfortunately, like, you know, obviously not everybody is going to be able to be saved. I think there is a potential to save a lot of people, though. And I think that in general, we need to have different levels of messaging for depending on who we're addressing. Like, if you're just going to do a fire hose of truth at like some random dude you're meeting on the street, it's not going to go very well for you. And you have to temper your message depending on who your audience is. And I think that that's a relatively, not a very difficult thing to do. I mean, you make different videos or different articles for different spaces, and you just, or maybe you get put out some leaflets and hand them out to people on the street or whatever. I mean, I think we really do need to think in terms of a lower tech approach, because the outlets online are just so controlled. But I mean, obviously an email list is better than like a Facebook thing. I mean, I gave up on Facebook years ago because I was tired of just the same five people responding to my post, and the only people that actually saw the post, and it's right. Like, okay, this is a waste of time. But yeah, we have to like really, there's only so much that one person can do. And so we have to make sure that the effort that we're expending is going into the right places, because otherwise, yeah, it can't really be every man for himself, because then they win. That's obviously they have a lot more firepower than we do, metaphorically and literally. So yeah, we need to work together, and we need to rescue those who can be rescued, and hope that the rest of them realize at some point when it's hurting them too much that they might come back looking for that information that you put out a long time ago that they ignored at that time. That's really the best you can do with some people, because, I mean, I refer to this sort of abandonment of all things human as being a pod person. And, like, it's possible to unpod person yourself, but it's not easy. And, again, this is, I look at it in terms of, like, a cult deprogramming thing. If you can get a person and remove them from all TV-related stimuli, problem is that as soon as they get back in front of a TV, they're pod people again. The programming is very difficult to shake, because, again, it's this one thing to learn helplessness. Okay, well, I don't know what is true. I don't know which way is up, but I do know that this is the loudest message. And, you know, those people who are heeding that message, they seem to be, you know, happy and healthy and hearty. No, they don't. They're completely fictional people. But so I'm going to go with them. Okay, yeah, have fun with that. But yeah, it's very difficult to like watch loved ones go off this cliff. And yeah. So I would say, if there's any chance, and obviously you know your loved ones better than some random person on the internet. So if you believe there's any chance to save that person, you go and you save that person, because, I mean, nobody wants to abandon their loved ones to this maw of like pure evil, basically. And yeah, so we got to do what we can. And that means, working hard and working smart.
It's funny you say that about RT. I know you write for RT. I love RT. And I was in London last year, 2019 summer, to do Renegade Inc. with Ross Ashcroft, who does that show there. And we were recording it in his studio, and we were done. We were still sitting on the set, but we were done recording it. And he was going, "Oh, that was great. That was great. That was so great." And he said, "You know, he said, I used to work at the BBC. I don't know if you knew that." I said, "No, I didn't know that." He said, "If we were having this conversation at the BBC, I'd have a producer in my ear telling me, get him off that subject, get him off, switch the topic. And if I didn't, then as soon as we were done recording this, they'd pull me upstairs into a 3-person committee or a panel or something, where they would explain to him what he had done wrong and basically put him on probation for something like that." And I was like, "Jesus Christ, that sounds ridiculous." And I said, "Well, you're at RT, and I said, I love RT, but I know that there's this perception inside the US that, oh, well, it's Russian, so you can't listen to anything." I said, have you ever been told what to say? He said, "I've even been critical of Putin, and I've never had anybody from RT tell me what I can and can't say on any topic." And I was like, "Really?" He says, "Not one." He said, "We've done 100 episodes, over 100 episodes. Not one time have I been told what I can and can't say." I was like, "Well, I wish everybody knew that, because it seems like, you know, when you watch anything from RT on YouTube, it puts the, you know, even on Twitter now too, it puts the little banner.
It puts the Wikipedia
thing there. Yes, we're tying this up in a nice little bow. It goes back to Wikipedia. What's your relationship been with RT? I know you're writing for them quite a bit.
No, they're a great place to work for. And yeah, they don't tell you what to say. You pitch an article, and if it's something that is going to interest the audience, you write the article and then you put it out there. I mean, and I think that RT actually has a much tighter like grasp on truth than a lot of these American organizations, because if RT gets a fact wrong, then it's held up as being, oh, evil Russian propaganda did this deliberately and they're evil and wrong and bad. If American media gets a fact wrong, then it's like, oh, honest mistake, oopsie, and half the time they don't even correct it. But so it's like, I mean, if you're just any random objective person, it doesn't matter what side your politics are on, but I mean, I would say RT is a hell of a lot more trustworthy than, say, oh, CBS, where they use the same footage of an Italian hospital like twice to say, oh, everybody's dying in New York. Okay, I actually went to the Coney Island COVID tent just to see, you know, is this as bad as there's somebody in there? It's like two dudes with clipboards. And okay, well, I guess we're not. And that's the thing, is that they're already trying to revise history in terms of New York and what happened here when Cuomo killed all the elderly. Is basically, oh yes, there were ambulances up and down the street all the time, and it was a terrible place and time to live. And oh, now, for one thing, you don't know if there were ambulances up and down the street. You heard sirens, maybe. But there's cops, there's fire trucks. It's not like ambulances have a special siren that, and I guarantee that those people who are talking, there's this one Molly Jong Fast, who is the most insufferable, like, ugh, horrible, yes. Horrible. And she's talking about how, oh, the ambulances were there all the time and everybody was dying and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, name two people you know who died. First and last name. They can't do it. Yeah. And there's so many of these stories where, oh, well, I didn't believe in the OMFG virus, and then I got sick and I almost died, and so you need to do this and wear your damn mask and get your damn vaccine. And it's like, these stories are fiction. These are not real. This is all like a biblical kind of like self-flagellatory, like, basically, I did not believe in the virus, and the virus smited me. I can never remember the correct past tense of smite, so I think I did it wrong again. It's either smote or I get it wrong.
We'll get fact-checked, don't worry.
Yeah, the virus hath smited me, and I deserved it because I did not believe. So you, too, must believe. And it's just so overwrought and, like, melodramatic, and it's really embarrassing. It's like, okay, I'm the same species as these people, what? But it's important to find elements of humor in this, because otherwise you'll go completely insane.
Yeah.
But I one thing that I noticed, this is the same thing that happened after 9/11, is that this country has totally lost its sense of humor. They cannot make jokes. It people don't get it, or they think that you're being serious, or one problem that I've had a couple times making jokes, and those jokes end up being reality like a month or so later, and it's like, that was supposed to be funny. That wasn't supposed to be, oh, let's do this now so you can't make satire anymore. Right. It's and I'm sure that the editors of like the Babylon Bee and stuff have the same problem.
It's
gotta be very difficult to write for the Babylon Bee right about now.
There's a special subcategory of Babylon Bee where it's like Babylon Bee predicts the future or something like that, and it's where all of their spoof articles have actually come true, and so they've got a segment of it, and there's plenty of them. I saw something on Twitter that was this person died, and this person was a non-believer in the coronavirus pandemic. And then they died, and their dying wish was that everybody wear a mask. And I retweeted it, and I just put Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. That was it. Because it was like, this is just straight propaganda.
Yeah.
There's no reality in which that story happened. There's no way that we're going to fact check it. It's going to get a percentage of the people to go, oh my God, that's I was skeptical too. Now I guess I'll wear my mask. And there's going to be another percentage that's going to go, what the fuck is this? How dare you come out with this obvious thing? Oh my God. I mean, we could talk forever. Hey, tell these people where they can find you. Where can they read what you're writing? Where can they buy your book? Where can they follow you on Twitter? Where can they see what you're doing?
Well, the central point of everything is helenofdestroy.com. Finally got the website up, hopefully for good now. I mean, it was good, touch and go there for a while. But I'm also on Twitter, Velociraptor23, VelociraptorE23. I didn't really think that through when I signed up with that name, that I was going to have to be spelling it, but you know, it's that's my main social media thing. And then of course, RT, you can search my name and you can find my articles there. But all the articles end up posted on my site at some point. So, and then you can get the When China Sneezes, the book that Cynthia McKinney edited. I'm chapter 13 in that book. There's also some other great writers. Whitney Webb is in there. Obviously, Cynthia herself is in there. There's a lot of good stuff in that book about basically they talk about how the virus came to be, what it was like to live under lockdowns in certain places, and then my chapter is about the permanent dystopia that we're hurtling into. So, yeah, that's published by Clarity Press. So we can include a link. Don't buy it off Amazon, people. Seriously, do not buy it off Amazon. If you want to get your money's worth. You might actually want to get the book at some point. Yeah. So yeah, I had so many people be like, yeah, I ordered your book like 3 months ago and I still haven't gotten it. I told you not to buy from Amazon, dude. But yeah, anyway, helenofdestroy.com is where the good stuff is. And youtube.com/helenofdestroy, bitchute.com/helenofdestroy. I'm working on an LBRY thing, but I haven't uploaded any content to that yet. So it'll be there eventually.
It's easy to do. You just link it to your YouTube and click copy, and it'll take all your YouTube videos and put them over on. And you don't even have to do it. We had I had the CEO of Library on, a big group show that we do, and he explained the whole process, and then I went and did it the next day, and I'm technically retarded, so I was able to make it happen really easily. So if I can do it, anyone can do it.
Cool.
That's Helen Byniski, everybody. Why don't you go support her work? I'm going to go buy that book because I love Whitney Webb. I put Cynthia McKinney in both of my books, and I love your work as well. Thanks, Helen, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.